Now we talk tunes. That, of course, the legendary Warner Brothers Looney Tunes music. And joining me as a guest today is Billy West, the guy who has provided voices for Bugs Bunny and Elmer Fudd and Porky Pig. He's going to be the voice of Popeye for a Fox TV special. It'll also be a DVD later this year for the 75th anniversary of Popeye. He also did most of the work on Ren and Stimpy and Futurama as the voices of most of those characters. And he's done many, many more, including the red M&M in the M&M's commercials. Hi, Billy.
I didn't know I did that much stuff.
You've done an enormous amount
of
stuff.
Took all the news back to me. I forgot.
Now, whose voice are you doing now?
This is actually Billy West talking.
Wow. That is the best Billy West I've ever heard.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's kind of why I did, on Futurama, there was a character named Fry, and basically he's a 25-year-old version of me. I figured that's the one that they won't be able to replace me on.
That's right.
You know, so he's a 25-year-old version of me, and that's, I guess, what I sounded like. And, boy, all this prolonged exposure to radiation is making me thirsty.
Now, what happened to Futurama? Why is it not on the air anymore?
Oh, there was a lot of infighting, you know, and Fox kind of made it go away. They wouldn't let anybody watch it. They kept switching the times, and, you know, I have no idea what the real reason was, but there was just weirdness going on. But Cartoon Network took it over,
yeah,
and they're running 5 years' worth of shows, and hardly anybody knew about Futurama even after 5 years. Now the Cartoon Network has this huge hit with it. It beats everything in its time period, including Jay Leno and Dave Letterman and Craig Kilborn and Jimmy Kimmel and Conan O'Brien.
Wow.
It beats all of them.
What would Jay Leno say about that?
Well, I think, you know, I mean, sometimes people dial wander. You know, I can't do that. I don't have a lock on the channel. You know, if I got to invent a TV that just had Channel 4, I mean, then we'd be doing good.
let me go back to Elmer Fudd and Bugs Bunny and some of these other guys who you now do, who, of course, were the original voices were created by the legendary Mel Blanc.
Yes.
Did you have to get the permission of the Blanc family to be the guy?
No, they did. They auditioned hundreds of people for stuff like that, and I did the movie Space Jam with Michael Jordan, and he was amazing. I mean, he talked to me after we had done the movie. He reached over about five people at this party and shook my hand, and he could do it, you know, because his arm was like 18 feet long, and you know, he said, good work, you know, because we didn't work together. All these things are sort of done separately.
Yeah.
But
Mel's family liked your work?
Well, I don't know if it's quite up to them. I think it's more like the property of Warner Brothers, and they have a casting department. And
as long as you can do it, you're the guy. But wasn't Mel's son, Noel, the voice for a while? What happened to him?
He was doing it. I guess he just wanted to get more involved in producing things and doing other things rather than the voices.
Gotcha. Were these voices easy for you because you'd grown up watching these cartoons and probably imitated them as a kid?
Yeah, there's a lot of guys like me that were running around doing that stuff throughout your whole life. And, you know, little did you know that one day you'd be the guy. But that's all there is to it. I mean, it's like you're the guy for the time that you get hired. I wouldn't make a whole career out of the fact that I did Bugs Bunny. Number one, I didn't create it.
Right.
So I don't, you know, I value, like, creating things far and away above imitating things.
Yeah.
You know, like on Futurama, I got to create voices, and that's more important. But it's also important to be able to be entrusted with the mantle of something that's a franchise.
Yeah, years from now, if somebody comes in and they're going to do Ren and Stimpy and you're still around, you're going to go, hey!
I'm an old geezer.
Hello, I'm still Ren, I'm still Stimpy. And
yeah, right.
By the way, when you do a show like that, or Futurama, where you do all these different voices, how difficult is that to do a scene with yourself? Obviously, you're not doing it contemporaneously with yourself. You're doing one character, and then you're doing the other one, I'm assuming. How difficult is that to switch back and forth?
Well, on Futurama, I pretty much did them in sequence, like as they appeared on the script. You know, one minute I'd be talking like Fry, and I'd be asking Leela a question, and then the professor would come in and go, good news, everyone. And then Zoidberg would look up from his plate and go, Don't give me the bad news, because every time you say good news, it's bad news. And then Zap Brannigan would pop in and go, oh, this is Zap Brannigan, master of time, space, the sky, the ocean, and the water. Oh, and winner of this year's Modesty Award.
Yeah.
And on Ren and Stimpy, I did them one at a time. I did the whole script as Stimpy, and then I did it as Ren, and then some other incidental voices. You know, he'd be like, will you button me, Ren? Will you shut up, you fool? You idiot! Shut up, else I shall kill you!
And you can switch and board back and forth easily, or do them all at one time and then do the other one at another time and have no problem with it?
Yeah, you know, because I had a radio background. And
yep. And
when you're live doing things, you don't have the luxury of double tracking on
no. The
air. And
no, it's all lighting. Live.
So, you know, it was almost like doing a puppet show.
Yeah. And when you have a script in front of you and you're doing the voice work in the studio,
mm-hmm. They
haven't done the animation yet. They do that later to what you've done in the studio, right?
Right, yeah. You record the voices first, and then they edit that together, and it would sound sort of like a radio play.
Yep.
And then they would add the pencil test to it and then begin the animation process to the voices. So it's sort of performance-driven rather than the other way around, where you have the images pre-built, and then you've got to squeeze in your performance.
And the music and sound effects are added in later. Have you ever had to do the sound effects, too?
A couple of times we did. Me and a guy named Johnny DiMaggio, who did the voice of Bender, we rapped the theme song a couple of times, and I was doing those scratching records, and he was doing it, and he was the beatbox, and I was, you know, doing weird little noises and stuff.
With all the stuff you do with your voice, have you ever forgotten how to do a particular voice? Maybe it wasn't a main character, it was a smaller character, and somebody says 2 years later, hey, do that guy again. And you go, how did that guy sound again?
I guess I look at it like every character has a musicality to it. In other words, almost thinking in music terms, because I am a musician, each character has a little musicality, like a rhythm and a melody of its own. And it's not like you got to remember where the voice is. You just have to remember what that cadence was. And as soon as it comes to you, the voice, you dial it up automatically. It just shows up.
And how do you create a voice?
Well, you borrow from what you saw in real life. You borrowed from people you saw on TV or you heard on the radio or in movies, and sometimes you fuse different influences together to create something totally new. Like a bad impression. Someone doing a bad impression of Jack Nicholson, in reality, is a voice that none of us have ever heard before.
That's right.
It becomes a new voice.
Right.
So a lot of times that's the way to go.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times there's characters from real life that that I remember very well and would, you know, sort of embody them as these voices.
And while I know the tune is drawn in later, the animation is drawn in later, do they come to you, for instance, for Futurama, does Matt Groening come to you and say, okay, I've drawn what I want the character to look like. Here's just a regular picture that I've drawn on a piece of paper.
Yes.
And when you look at that picture, you go, okay, well, now I have an idea of how I'm going to make this guy sound.
Yeah, that's how it started. When everybody was auditioning for this thing, they give you pictures, and they give you some script, you know, dialogue, and they want to see what you would do with it. And I looked at the characters, and I just thought, it kind of puts itself together for you. You look at the weight and the features of somebody, and you try to figure out, like, well, what's that person's philosophy in life? What's their own personal history? And it doesn't matter if you're right or wrong. It's whatever you do with it, and if it works, it works.
So there's nobody else in the room saying, no, Billy, lower. Take it down lower.
Well, you know, people do suggest certain things, but a lot of times I think that they just hope that you'll use your instinct, because everybody's very eager to say, can you do that, like, with a Spanish accent? Or what if he was a feminine? Or what if he was a carpenter and he was a mad carpenter? Or, you know, you get anything thrown at you.
Talking with Billy West, voice man spectacular here on the Paul Harris Show on the Big 550 KTRS. He's got a website, by the way, called BillyWest.com, where you can see all of his amazing credits and also get his CD called Billy West and the Grief Counselors, either at the website or at 866-BILLY-40. That's the phone number there. And it also has a project. I don't know if this has come out yet. You were working on something with Mark Hamill. What was that?
That was Comic Book the Movie. What it was all the voice guys that we know got together and decided to make a movie based out of Comic-Con, which is in San Diego. It's the huge comic book convention. And we, basically it ad-libbed it. We knew what the story was going to be and where we needed to go, but we just decided to sort of get the scenes together by ad-libbing and improvising, and it came off as if we were sort of like real people, but it's funny, if you do see the movie, you will see what most of your favorite voice people look like.
Oh, so it's not an animated movie, it's
no,
live
it's
action?
No, it's live action, and we're all acting in it.
Uh-huh.
And
what's it like being with Mark Hamill at any kind of convention? I mean, the guy who was Luke Skywalker, you got to have, you know, Star Wars fans going up and going, oh, my God, it's Luke!
Yeah, I know. And, you know, life is tough without a lightsaber. That's all I know.
And when you're at a convention, the Comic-Con, it's called?
Yes.
When you go to something like that and you've been doing all these voices, are there Ren and Stimpy or Futurama fans or any other fans
of
your work?
Oh, nothing but. We would do a panel, you know, and we would be all on stage and people would ask us questions. And it was nice to talk about stuff, you know, because we never really get to do that. And there are so many people that are really interested in it.
And were there people who, like Star Trek fans who were really, excuse me, in the third episode of the second season of Futurama, you went to a planet that so-and-so-and-so or whatever it was, and they know stuff about it. And you're looking around going, I don't remember that. What are you talking about?
Well, of course, you know, I mean, that wasn't the only thing that I was doing at the time. You know?
Right, yeah.
I was doing like two or three other shows at the time. But I do know what they're talking about, but I don't remember specifics. You know what? I saved all the scripts. I saved every script and every storyboard. I always do that.
And you never have to memorize a script, do you?
No, that's the best part about it is you can just sit there and perform it because you're a voice person.
Yeah, very nice.
Now my problem is that they're just yanking in famous actors and they've crash the party, and like without their faces, their voices are useless. You know, I mean, I can't get with the fact that I have to listen to the many voice of Cameron Diaz, you know, who makes $20 million for coming in and doing a character.
You don't like the fact that she's one of the voices of Shrek, along with people like Eddie Murphy and the like.
Yeah, I mean, they try to come across in the very beginning like, hey, we just work for scale. You know, we're doing this for our kids. And that's a noble thought and everything, so you could be cool for your kid, you know, because when Stallone comes home or Schwarzenegger, you know, to the kids, it's like, you know, he's not a big hero like to the rest of the world. It's just, here comes Lunkhead, you know, Daddy. And then one day, Daddy Lunkhead comes home and says, guess what Daddy is now? He's a cartoon. He's an ant in a cartoon. And now you can tell your friends how cool you are because he's a cartoon character.
That's right.
And that's what makes him a big deal in his own home. They like that, but they also like to make the kind of money they usually laugh.
Yeah.
They make.
Yeah.
And, you know, so here everybody was lying about what they were making, and they were getting $20 million and $15 million, and they were pretending that they were working for scale, and it's like, I don't believe any of this.
Just for future reference, it's Governor Lunkhead. Please.
Governor Lunkhead.
A little respect, please, for goodness sake. speaking of money, I hear your pals who do the voices for The Simpsons, the other Matt Groening show,
yes,
that pretty much saved the Fox network, they're threatening to hold out and not go back to work unless they get paid more money.
I don't know. I think most people can identify with this. You know, it's like that's the reward you get for doing good work.
And these are the people, by the way, who are that show. I mean, you talk about Dan Castellaneta and Julie Kavner and Harry Shearer and the people who make that show, just like you made Ren and Stimpy and Futurama what it was. Somebody else, I mean, you wouldn't go and say, okay, well, you know what? Those guys want more money and the network's not going to give it to them, so I'm going to now step in and I'm going to be Homer. You wouldn't do that, would you?
Well, Fox's logic is they could go on any campus in the United States and find a Homer. But that's all well and good, but the work was done. The choices have been created. You can't think like the guy who creates a voice. You just can't.
Right.
And that voice is a combination of choices, not only vocally but mentally, that Dan Castellaneta had to come up with. You know, why does he say something and it's hilariously funny and somebody else says it and it's not funny? You just have to have a comedic ability. And I guess they're so out of touch with what's funny in the television business, you know, because I don't find a whole lot funny. I just don't. You know, the Rosie O'Donnells of the world and all of those people never made me laugh, ever. And they're always one joke away from Palookaville anyway. You know, and what they are is basically wacky.
Yeah.
And television is filled with wacky people, and wacky was invented by people who aren't funny. So you'll never see another Jackie Gleason or a Sid Caesar or a Red Skelton. You know, I mean, those guys had real talent, and now there's, like, such a lack of it that people don't even know what it is. I mean, they'll think Kirstie Alley is funnier than Tracy Ullman. you know, because they don't get Tracy Ullman. They can't fathom that level of talent. And
yeah.
So they'd rather just, like, you know, worship at the altar of somebody that's just almost just like them.
I find it hard to believe anybody's worshiping at the altar of Kirstie Alley.
Yeah, well, she was voted, like, the big queen of comedy there for a stretch. And I was going, look at all the famous and fabulous comedians that are funny.
Right.
You know, and she's making jokes. You know, 8 million comedians out of work, and she's doing humor.
Hey, before I run out of time here, can I press you into service to do some celebrities for me?
Well, you know, I don't know how many I can do. I mean, I'm usually like a utility infielder if they do.
Well, let me ask you, and I'll throw some out, and you see what you can do here.
Okay. Because
I know you did Charlton Heston's voice on Just Shoot Me. I'm wondering what Charlton Heston sounds like as an American Idol judge.
Does he have Alzheimer's or no?
No, Planet of the Apes, Heston.
Oh, pre-Planet of the Apes.
No, back to those days, you know?
I don't know. I had a whole take on the Post news.
Oh, where?
You know, it's like, well, Mr. Heston, you totally blew us away with your acting, and we want you to sort of recreate that scene from the Planet of the Apes. Oh, yes. Keep your hands off me, you damn dirty goats! No, that's damn dirty. Keep your hoofs off me, you damn dirty goat. Well, what about that famous line where Soylent Green is like, oh, yes, yes, yes. Soylent Green is funny.
No, it's people,
Soylent
Mr.
Green
Heston.
Is people. Soylent Green.
All right, switch to somebody else. How about, I know you do an Alec Baldwin voice.
Well, that came about... When I was at a vocal doctor and he was checking my throat and the tube that he was looking through, the camera went down way too far and I threw up all over the place.
Really?
And I was out of breath, my voice was shot, and I had just thrown up, and I said to the doctor, Doctor, I'm really sorry, I really am. And it sounded like Alec Baldwin.
And from then on,
Charles, what's the matter? Are you afraid of the bear, Charles? Is that what bothers you, Charles?
And from then on, you've got the Alec Baldwin voice.
Yeah.
So when people ask you,
throw up somewhere.
Yeah. When people ask you, how do you create some of your voices? Well, first you vomit.
Yeah. Right.
And,
no, it's just like, you know, somebody would say, try acting. It's a lot easier.
Right. Right. So the CD has songs that you've done over the last year or so.
Yeah, I was a musician before I did anything. I had my first band in 1966, and then I decided to go back to music. And I put together 15 songs, and none of them are stylistically the same. I mean, there's no two. It's like a collection of various artists, but it's all me.
Will people expect to hear the voices from Futurama and those on this and be disappointed?
No, they know what I do, but I mean, the people that are into me. But I was doing some different stuff on there that no one's heard, and, you know, just trying to keep fresh and new. And the songs are really cool. I want everybody to hear it to know that I was actually a serious musician.
Right.
who doesn't take it too seriously, because there's a lot of funny things on there.
You're not more serious about music than Kirstie Alley is, are you?
Ah,
nobody is. Nobody is. And the
my drumstick.
And the Popeye project on Fox this fall for the 75th anniversary. You're the voice of Popeye?
Well, blow me down.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
I was the voice of Popeye on Fox.
Somebody once told me years ago that to do Popeye, you just put the letter K at the end of every other word, and you pretty much, like, spinach-k.
Spinach-k. Yeah, that's pretty much, but the secret of that voice is that it's two different voices at once.
Oh, yeah?
It's a high voice and a low voice. That was the clue to it. It's absolutely an octave apart. We're like, yoo-hoo, Olive, I bring you some flowers. And then the other voice was like, yoo-hoo, Olive, I bring you some flowers. And you put them together, and it's like, yoo-hoo, Olive, I bring you some flowers.
Wow. Very cool. We'll look for that this fall on Fox, and there's also going to be a DVD to celebrate the 75th anniversary of Popeye.
It's so much fun. There was a guy doing Bluto, and it was scary. I mean, so the voices are really, really great. The girl that does Olive Oil, and they're using Kathy Bates. That actress Kathy Bates,
yeah.
As the sea hag.
Cool. Well, I'll tell you what, when that's going to air this fall, come on back. We'll talk about that project, okay?
I'd love to. I threaten to come in there someday. How about that?
I'd love to have you here. Absolutely. The website is billywest.com, or you can order his CD at 1-866-BILLY-40, one of the great voice guys in Toonland. Billy West, thanks for your time today.
Thank you, Mr. Paul Harris.
This is the Paul Harris Show on the Big 550 KTRS.